Hey, how y'all doing? God, we missed you. Just being around, just seeing you every day. It's great. What you got going today? All right, I'm ready.
Norm, what the hell? What the hell? Norm Turner.
I love him.
Welcoming a couple Vikings over to OTAs, apparently.
Hey, how's everybody doing over there?
Chad Greenway.
Hey.
Kyle Rudolph.
How y'all doing? God, we missed you. Just being around, just seeing you every day. It's great. What are you cutting on today? All right, I'm ready.
These OTAs are really important. They're important for team building, important for getting the defense installed. Just, it's good for the offseason.
To have the opportunity to play in this offense, and not only to play in this offense, but to have the guys around me that we have out here, you know, with a Mike Wallace, with a Jarius Wright, Adrian Peterson, Cordero Patterson, and then you have a guy like Teddy Bridgewater in his second year who's so much more comfortable and has really grabbed this offense as his.
Music to my ears. I don't know about you guys. Two guys, two voices outside of Norv Turner. Chad Greenway being one of those. One of our older players and a team leader and a guy that got his contract redone.
I'd say more seasoned, not necessarily old. Seasoned.
Well, he's a 10-year guy.
I know, but more seasoned. 10 years. Nobody likes to be called old these days.
He's one of the older players. I mean, he's one of the old gents around there. He's the old man.
Is he the
oldest guy? Randall McGandler used to say to me when I was 36, 37, 38 years old, he'd say, "Come on, old man, we got to go play a game." Every week.
Yeah. Well, you are a grandpa.
I was and am.
You are.
Literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to hear Kyle Rudolph, another guy that we expect great things from, to say the things that he was saying about Teddy Bridgewater grasping this offense and making it his offense, I mean, those are good signs. Those are good signs for players to be saying, he's got this. I can only imagine the sponge known as Ted Bridgewater.
Ted.
I mean, Ted knows offense already. He's a sharp quarterback. And the thing that won me over with Teddy Bridgewater was the interview or the session that he had with John Gruden. And I'm like, that guy knows his football. He's got a high football IQ.
As everybody else was throwing daggers at Ted Bridgewater because he didn't wear a glove in his pro day and he was banking shots off the side of the indoor facility down there in Louisville, and he dropped all the way from being probably the number one overall player taken in last year's draft, or at least the first quarterback taken, all the way to number 32, where the Vikings had to trade back up and grab him, and thank God they did. God, I love football so much, and I just feel like this Adrian Peterson coming back to Winter Park this week has lifted the spirits of the Minnesota Vikings. There's almost... You can almost see a glow when they talk, because, you know, Norv Turner and George Edwards spoke this morning, and some of the players, obviously Chad Greenway and Kyle Rudolph, and they're all just beaming. Everybody, I mean, on the media is just swarming like vultures, asking questions, Adrian this, Adrian that, Adrian this. But I think they know they have one of the best players in the NFL back now in on their team, in the offense, in their backfield, and anything is now possible.
It really is. It's onward and upward. All this other stuff that was not football related at all in any way, let's just hope that that goes away. Let's hope that that becomes just a thing of the past, and the way we start doing things now from this point on can just be football. You know, all you pretty much hear out of Green Bay is football. You know, if you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And farts.
And farting too. Yeah. And farts. Pittsburgh. New England.
Mm.
Not Dallas for the most part, although they can add some drama from time to time. But for the most part, you talk football when you talk about those teams. Denver. I want to be one of those teams. I just want to be a team that is up and looking forward to the next week and the next weekend of football. And Peterson being back can help that a lot.
And no off-field shenanigans. No drunken driving, no tasers, no tear gas, no none of that. Just play football.
Yes.
Speaking of no drama, I saw Entourage last night. And if you like boobs, that's a good movie to go see. Did you ever watch Entourage on HBO?
I have not. I've been told that it's outstanding.
It's a great TV show. And I went to go watch the movie last night. I saw it at 8 o'clock at Rosedale AMC.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes doesn't have that rated very well.
I can't imagine. It's just like watching a TV show at a movie theater. That's what I walked out of there going, it wasn't a movie necessarily.
Yeah.
Even though it was a movie, it was like watching the TV show, but plenty of...
boobage?
Well, a lot of boobs. A lot of beautiful,
bunches
beautiful
of boobs
breasts
everywhere.
And nipples. I love nipples.
Oh.
But Russell Wilson was in there. Rob Gronkowski was in there.
That's right.
Rob Gronkowski was partying, and he had the elbow in a sling, and he was jamming with. For some reason, he had a crutch too. A crutch in his arm was in a, but he was just banging all these chicks.
Well, yeah.
And drinking.
Oh, he was. He was doing that too.
Yeah, Tom Brady was in the movie. They were just. God, I'm trying to think. Russell Wilson was in it. There were a lot of celebrities in the show. Celebrities and professional athletes.
I saw
Clay Matthews was in it.
That doesn't surprise me.
His hair was beautiful.
Man, I'm telling you. He's got some hair on him now. They had a top 10 list last night of, what was it? And he was right in the middle of that.
Top 10 list on what?
The NFL Network.
Oh, the NFL Network.
Of course, they had a great top 10 list. I'll think about it later, but you mentioned Clay Matthews. And he made the list. He always makes the list.
Top 10 beautiful hairdos?
Might be. Might have been.
No, it wasn't that. Troy Polamalu would probably be number one.
Oh, top 100 players.
Oh, top
from
100 players.
60 down to 51 last night. And I think Clay rolled up in there at about 53.
Which is interesting because I would have put him probably a little bit farther up there, but just because he's such a dynamic force for that Green Bay Packers defense, they can move him everywhere.
He's a machine.
And he just does the deal. He is an unstoppable rebel force.
He is. He really is. I mean, the kid is, I played with his father, Clay Sr., in Cleveland. Just like his old man. Same moves, everything. But the one thing that the junior has is, that the senior didn't have is that he can play inside and play it very well. He had to come inside and play middle linebacker last year for the Green Bay Packers, and he was lighting the place up.
What are you thinking about, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, there's going to be an e-docu-series about Clay Matthews turning into a woman?
A good chance.
Transgender.
I think it's a good chance.
Because when you think about it, the long, beautiful, flowing hair, and he does it like Fabio. He puts it in the wind. He loves it when, you know. And he,
he's a little Triple H about him, though, too. He wets it down. And like,
he does wet it down.
Yeah, he does. He'll wet her down.
Triple H trying to get Dwight Howard to join the WWE when he retires from basketball.
Dwight's a soft basketball player.
Yeah.
How's he going to wrestle?
I don't know. Wrestling's fake, by the way. I forgot to tell you.
Wait.
Excuse me.
Whoa.
Hello?
Huh?
Wrestling's not real.
It is, too. It's very real.
Wrestling?
Pro wrestling's real.
Wrestling.
I just want to thank each and every one of y'all for all you've done to your bodies. It's still real to me, damn it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they made, you know, Kurt Hennig came in with Brock Lesnar on a show that I used to have. And they made Dan Burrell really mad, really super mad. And, of course, Dan he had to hang up because anyone would. He had to hang up.
He was on the phone?
He was on with me. He had to do a segment with me.
Uh-huh.
And it got to the point where they weren't supposed to talk at all, but they jumped in, and they were talking to him and got him mad.
What did they say?
Everything.
Did they say
Burrell's... He had to hang up. I would have done the same thing.
Huh.
And right after he hung up, they looked at me like they were surprised he hung up. And Brock says, he must not know we're heels. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard.
It's all one big
joke. He must not know that we're heels.
It's all one big
joke. And, of course, they're heels. And the best one maybe ever of all time was Kurt Hennig. And you just can't argue or fight a verbal battle with one of those guys, because that's what they do. They love to be in those kind of things. So they made fun of people for about 10 minutes. Yeah. It was a good show, though.
It was a great show.
It was. You know, another thing, though, back to the Vikings and back to that top 10 list, or I'm sorry, top 100 list.
Yes.
Adrian Peterson made the list again.
What do you mean he made the list again? He was already number 62.
What do you mean?
He was number 62 last week.
Well, but he made the top 100, and he didn't play last year, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he slid up like 38 spots.
Oh, he slid down 50, I can't remember. He was in the top 10 last year.
That's what I'm saying. He slid all the way up. Well, I'm calling it from one up to like
62. I'm saying down because,
Yeah, I mean, he lost ground. Let's put it that way. But you want to talk about, I mean, that's respect, isn't it? We're talking about Peterson. We're talking about some of the people on this top 100 list.
In the NFL Network, the players in the NFL are the people that vote on the top 100 players.
Yeah, yep.
Basically voting for or against their peers.
I think right now at this point, and we're only halfway through the list, we're at 51 right now, but three of the four defensive linemen for the Buffalo Bills are in the top 100. That ain't bad.
Three of the four offensive linemen?
Yeah.
For the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, for the Buffalo Bills. I think that's dominant. That's a pretty good team. They are going to have an outstanding football team soon.
Why not right now? I mean, with Shady in the backfield, Matt Castle is the quarterback.
That's the question mark.
Somebody that just isn't necessarily going to turn the ball over. Sammy Watkins. Tight end. What do they have? Tight end. Doesn't matter. Defense pretty decent. It's only going to get better with Rex really Ryan.
They're gonna rock. They're gonna rock the house. I'm not kidding. And it's gonna. I think it's gonna hinge on the comeback of Matt Castle and that foot and everything else that he had. There was a problem for him here, obviously, but I think if anyone can get something out of him and out of that team, I think Matt Castle is good for that team.
How do you feel about the Minnesota Lynx? They open up tomorrow, target center against Amanda Zowie B, the sophomore that entered the WNBA draft. The Gopher had 2 years of eligibility left. The annual survey of the WNBA and general managers released by the league, and to nobody's surprise, the Lynx fared pretty well. In a nutshell, the Lynx, here's how they did in the survey. 10 of 12 GMs picked the Lynx to win the Western Conference, which I think is a no-brainer. They've been in the finals quite often last year, winning two of the last four WNBA titles. 8 of 12 GMs picked the Lynx to win the WNBA title this year.
They've got everything just sort of mapped out, and all these gals are on contract for long-term contracts. They locked it all in. I think they have a good chance and a window of maybe one or two titles in that time frame.
8 of 12 of these GMs in the WNBA picked Maya Moore to repeat as the league MVP.
Yeah.
Lindsey Whalen finished first, Simone Augustus in a tie for second in the voting for the league's best guard.
Yeah. We got them all.
I mean, it's
same team.
It's interesting because you talk about the big three in the NBA with the Miami Heat or the Boston Celtics or how stacked the Lakers have been in the past. We have that right here in the WNBA.
Simone Augustus, Lindsey, and Maya Moore.
I mean, it just goes on forever. Maya Moore got 7 of 12 votes for the league's best forward. Cheryl Reeve, the coach, got 7 of 12 votes for the league's best coach.
We spoke with her at the State Fair. You remember that?
Yeah,
we interviewed her. Yep. Yeah.
She finished in a tie for first with Phoenix coach Sandy Brondello in the category for best manager, motivator. Maya Moore in Chicago's Elena Del Don finished in a tie for best pure shooter. Augustus finished second to Atlanta's Angel McCautry in the category for player best at getting her own shot. Moore finished second to McCautry and most dangerous player in the open floor. Moore voted league's best finisher. Augustus' crossover move is voted the best individual offensive move in the league. And the Lynx are voted as having the best home court advantage. And they do because
with a
team like that, they are so fun to watch. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I was making fun of women's basketball when it first started, like kind of like with lacrosse and the Swarm over in St. Paul. Nobody goes. Nobody cares. What are they doing? And I get the fact that you have to start somewhere.
You do.
But the Minnesota Lynx, I'll be darned if they aren't fun to watch. I'll watch them on TV.
They're great.
I'll go to games.
They're great. I used to take my girls when my daughters were a little younger than they are now. I used to take them to the Lynx games, and I always got great seats. And sitting right down the row from me would be Kevin Garnett and everyone else watching the game.
Yeah, it sure does a body good to watch a team that just absolutely destroys everybody. But the talent.
Fun. They are so fun.
The talent all on one team. And especially the hometown team with Lindsey Whalen coming back. And then they drafted Maya Moore.
We lose McCarville, though, right?
She's not playing this year.
Yeah.
My favorite player, though, Simone Augustus. I just love her.
I'm telling you what. I've had a chance to speak with her before, and just outstanding. Outstanding. And I think that she and Lindsey and who else was
Maya
on the
Moore?
Maya Moore was on the Olympic team, and they all had gold medals, and they brought him in. It was fun to watch.
My favorite WNBA player of all time, and it sounds kind of weird to have a favorite WNBA player of all time, Cheryl Swoops.
Oh, yeah.
And Augustus reminds me of Cheryl Swoops.
Yeah, she might be more athletic. Simone Augustus.
Oh, absolutely.
She's more athletic.
I think you're absolutely right, God, but she does remind me of Cheryl Swoops.
And you want to talk about finding your own shot? She is creative, and she can hit them from anywhere, too.
But she can shut down defense, too. She can play shutdown defense. It's just, I don't know, I'm just excited.
And Lindsey Whalen, she plays all year round.
Most
I'm like, how do you do this? I mean, because she's a scrapper, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Lindsey will be on the floor sliding for every loose basketball there is in the gym. I mean, she's not going to let a ball go, unfought for, that's for sure.
I love them all.
I do, too.
I love them all.
Maya Moore. what, three titles at Connecticut?
I believe so.
In high school, four titles.
Yeah.
I think she's got two at this, one anyway, two at this point.
Two.
Yeah, she's good.
She's real good.
I think they have her locked in for about 6 years, too.
Yeah.
We're going to be good. We're going to be good.
Yeah.
I'll go to those damn games. I love them.
I know, me too. They're a big deal.
Yeah. Is it Michael Jackson? Jackass. Sorry. We got to take a break, don't we?
We have 4.5 questions coming up, but first I want you to make a small little announcement.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. Caller number 15 at 651-989-9105 wins a pair of tickets to see the St. Paul Saints play the Sioux Falls Canaries. Canaries, you say? Put one of those on your forearm and go down into a mine and make sure that you watch the bird, make sure it doesn't fall asleep. If it does, head for the mountains.
The mountains of Bush.
Yeah. That'll be this Sunday at the new CHS Field, in Lowertown. So caller number, get your tickets at 651-989-9105. Do that right away. We have 4.5 questions coming up next. I will be stellar in my response.
You better be having some doozies.
Oh.
I have some doozies, including a couple of political questions.
Oh,
the
hell.
NBA final starting tonight, Twins and Viking.
He said doozies. I don't know what doozy means, but we'll define that later when we come back.
You know, I think this time of year, everyone's working on getting better, and I think Cordero's really taken a very positive approach in terms of doing the things we're asking him to do. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into if you're having success on Sundays. And, you know, some of it's out of your control, and a lot of it's in your control. So I think he understands them. I think he's working on doing the little things we're asking him to do. He's got a smile on his face, and he's working hard.
Offensive coordinator Norv Turner commenting on Cordarrelle Patterson, who could be an X factor. I mean, we're worried about all the receivers and everything that we're trying to acquire because he had kind of a hiccup in his career. Let's put it that way. And if he can regain full stride, then we end up with an incredible football player, obviously, and Mike Wallace. And that makes life really miserable for people if you put both them out there.
And don't even forget, I mean, there's so many other options. Charles Johnson, Wright, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, Mecole Pruitt, who the Vikings drafted in the fifth round. Fred Ellison.
Diggs looks pretty good, too.
Diggs. Good Lord. Well, you heard Norv Turner, 4.5 questions, just talking this morning about the views on the offense. I've played a couple of clips already and the players that he has at his disposal. And Cordarrelle Patterson, a first-round draft pick entering third year in the NFL already, said he has a smile on his face. He's doing everything the coaches are asking. But Cordell also said himself earlier this offseason that this year is basically do or die for his career. So what is success and what is failure this season for Cordarrelle Patterson? And basically, what are these realistic expectations for a guy who could be an unbelievable star in this league? Or he could be a dumpster fire.
And that was last year. So he's already managed to do that, too. Year before that, his rookie year, he was a pleasant surprise. Ended up in the Pro Bowl as a return man. Lined him up in the backfield, in the slot, and everything else. And you throw him the football in open space and let him go from there. I mean, he's fine because that's what he does. I mean, that's why he's a great kick return guy. You throw him the ball out on the flank and let him make people miss. But now ask him to run a route and be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there and cut when he's supposed to cut and make a break knowing the ball is already out of the quarterback's hands. He doesn't have that yet. He doesn't have it.
But how hard is that?
It's hard.
If you just practice and put in the work, it seems like it really should be easy because you have to. Well, you run here and you go there.
Yeah. If you practice that a lot,
that's the problem.
That might be a problem.
He wasn't practicing.
He wasn't taking it seriously, and we heard Norv talk about that. There are some things you can control. There's a lot of things out there that you can control, but you have to be in charge of that. I mean, you have to take that on upon yourself. There are a lot of things you can't control. You heard Coach say that too. That's just what the NFL brings to the table. So at least control the things that you know you can do if you put your mind to it and you put the work into it. Do the time and you'll be fine. But, you know, I mean, you have to be sharp too. Obviously, you have to be able to read defenses and know where the quarterback expects you to come out of your break. If the quarterback sees it, he's expecting you to see the same thing and come out of the break and make the side adjustment, and the ball's coming out sooner or a little later.
As somebody who didn't play in the NFL for 13 years, or even 1 year, or even play college football, me, it was hard for me to kind of fathom the fact that Cordarrelle Patterson had this great breakout year his rookie year, and then you have this offensive genius come in here to be the offensive coordinator, Norv Turner, and obviously the offense being a little bit more complicated, a little bit more intricate with Norv Turner running the show, but how Norv Turner couldn't just figure out how to get Cordarrelle Patterson the ball and make him shine last year. That was frustrating as a guy for me to watch that happen and go, for me, and I say to you all the time, what about slants and what about little drag routes or just get him the ball within a yard or two of the line of scrimmage? Just banging my head against the TV, going, why isn't this working?
Yeah, it's a conglomerate of problems, of issues that you have with a guy like that. He's a liability out there to not run the right thing, and you saw that Norv Turner had no trouble putting a guy like Charles Johnson out there. Because he knows what he's doing.
Well, Norv Turner said Charles Johnson, the best wide receiver they had.
That's a big statement. But I agree. I think that when he came in, it was like, who's this guy? I mean, he stands up and makes you pay notice of attention to him right away. And I agree with Norv Turner. I thought that when he was finally in his groove and about 3 or 4 weeks in and with Teddy throwing to him, that was the hookup. That was definitely the hookup. I mean, Jarius Wright, too. But what we have now is the chance, and Zimmer walked us through it. He put it on film. He put the reel on, and we studied some film, just the way we used to in football when I was playing. But everyone got to see it in the media that was down there, and he was showing where the ball was going to come out. It was already out of the hand of the quarterback, and Cordarrelle had not made a break yet. He did not see what the quarterback was expecting him to see, make the adjustment, and the ball's out. Turn, it's going to be there.
It's interesting you bring that up because Vikings.com, I was watching this, I believe it was yesterday, Mike Wallace was mic'd for practice and also had a little camera on his helmet. And so he'd run a route and you'd hear him running and he would turn his head and the ball.
There it is.
He would make a turn and turn his head and literally put his hands up and the ball is right there.
Yep.
You don't see Teddy Bridgewater throwing the ball. The ball is already in the air by the time you make your break.
And you've got to be a great receiver to turn and just make and know it's going to be there, trust it's going to be there, and then make the catch. It's the reaction time is incredible for your eyes to be on that football and to make the catch because it's on you already. Yep. You know, it's a really quick reaction that you have to the football. But then you also see him break it off too early and the ball sails over his head. And everyone says, you know, Bridgewater's crazy. I mean, he can't get the ball down.
Yeah.
No.
Son of a gun.
Yeah.
Second question in 4.5 questions at 4:30. The Twins signed Phil Hughes to a 3-year deal last year. He went out basically as a reclamation project from the New York Yankees. Had a heck of a year last year. So the Twins threw even more money at him this offseason. Mike Berardino talking smack yesterday about the fact that Phil Hughes is a bargain at almost $14 million a year. Are you concerned at all with what he's doing in the mound so far this year? Because I am. He's 4-5 with a 4.96 ERA. There are times so far this year where he's had decent outings. He's had good outings, but there are also times where he gets shelled like he already did this this series in Boston.
I think it's a reason for concern, but after hearing Mike Berardino talk about him, I think it was yesterday or day before, and he's talked about his location being the problem. He used to paint the corners last year, and he was great at it, but he's losing control of that, apparently. Now, he also said that he's diligent about finding the way to get back on track, and that he's a sharp enough guy, he's a smart guy, and he will get back on track. But he started awfully slow last year, too, and came on like gangbusters. And they're expecting that kind of thing to happen here, too. But they probably did the right thing in getting him for the price they got him at, because I think he's going to right the ship. I think he's going to be the starter that we think he is. And I think that 3 years down the road, you save money on what the market would have been to sign him down the road off his old contract.
At least that's what Mike Berardino is saying, and I think that's what the Twins are hoping for, like Mike Berardino said yesterday. In Hardball with Mike Berardino. He's a smart guy. He's young.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because Tommy Malone pitched today for the Minnesota Twins, and they were having a hard time finding a spot for him, even though he was pitching lights out at AAA Rochester. Just wait until Irvin Santana comes back from his 80-game PED suspension. Question 3, 4.5 questions. The NBA Finals start tonight. Most people think that the Cleveland Cavaliers don't really have a chance because it's, for the most part, LeBron James against a team.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, there's no Kevin Love, but Kevin Love's a piece of crap. Kyrie Irving still kind of limping around, doing some things.
Yeah.
Steph Curry, the rest of the Golden State Warriors, they are tough. Do you expect LeBron, did you expect him to make it back to the finals this year? Do you think Cleveland will win it all? And what, if any, effect will it have on LeBron's legacy if he doesn't win it all this year?
Well, he's been to several, and he's lost two or three, hasn't he? One with Cleveland and two with Miami,
two
right?
Two with Miami, yeah. I believe.
And one, two with Miami. Yeah, if he continues to get to the finals and not get it done, but that just goes to show you how good he is. He's doing it really on his own. He's done that like twice now. Once with Cleveland his first couple years, and now again with a gimpy Kyrie Irving and Love out of the mix.
If they win the championship this year, do you just tell Love to go take a walk?
Oh, he can walk.
Go take a hike.
Here, have a ring. Here, have a ring and go. But yeah,
have a ring that you had nothing to do with.
Yeah. He really didn't contribute that much, I don't think, this year. I don't think so.
And he wasn't in the play. I mean, he was really not in the playoffs at all.
And he was sort of a pain in the ass.
He's a giant
They
pain
were
in the
all
ass.
Kind of having a problem with the way he was trying to mix in. And he wasn't mixing in.
Prediction for the finals?
I think that Golden State's too much team. I wouldn't be surprised to see LeBron just light the place up, though,
a couple times.
Yeah. If he does, his legacy is, I think, pretty safe either way. I think people are sharp enough to know he doesn't have enough team around him, but you can't win.
The biggest story,
by yourself,
coming back to Cleveland and then winning a championship in his first year with all these young guys when everybody thought it was going to take forever. Granted, the Cleveland Cavaliers did trade for Imam Shumpert and J.R. Smith and some other guys, some depth, but they've done a study online. I think it's thebigleague.com. Jason McIntyre, some guy that I really love following on Twitter, said that Michael Jordan and LeBron James, he compared them both and said LeBron James has had a far less supporting cast.
Oh yeah.
But has faced far tougher
opponents. Yeah.
Than Michael Jordan did.
I think Michael Jordan had a couple nasty finals.
But he never lost, I think, and one with
the Suns and Charles Barkley. He never lost one.
Used the Rockets, I want to say too. Maybe even the San Antonio Spurs, the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, the Jazz with Malone and Stockton.
Seattle Supersonics, I want to say maybe one year.
Might have with the Rain Man and Jack Sikma. Remember him?
Who's the Rain Man?
That was
Detlef Schrempf.
No. He was great too. Oh come on, man.
Sean Kemp. He was the Rain Man.
Sean Kemp was Rain Man. Yeah, he'd make it rain.
It's crazy.
Peyton might have been still there too, Gary Payton.
No, I'm sure he was. Question number four and a half questions at 4:30. Here's a bit of a heavy one. The first NBA player to come out as gay, Jason Collins. Talked about him before. I'm going to tell you what he said about Tony Dungy, and I want to get your response because I don't think it was necessarily called for. It kind of came out of the blue. Jason Collins said, quote, if you were to ask Tony Dungy if he feels like homophobia is in his level of thinking or if he's homophobic, he'd say no, Collins said. Well, if you were to ask Donald Sterling if he sees his comments as racist, he'd say no, too. Some people don't recognize their own racism or homophobia. His awareness and people like him are the problem. Jason Collins, free to be gay, just as Tony Dungy is free to not agree with his lifestyle. Last summer, you'll remember, Tony Dungy did say that he would not have drafted Michael Sam, the first openly gay athlete in the NFL. Of course, Dungy used the vaunted distraction angle as a reason for passing on Sam, saying, quote, not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have a chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. Your initial thoughts on what Jason Collins is going after Tony Dungy, beloved guy around these parts.
One of the most respected guys in my past, no question about it. I regard him highly, Tony Dungy. One of the best coaches I ever had in all the 13 years that I played. Collins is a little bit over the top. I understand what angle he's shooting for, but I don't think you have to come down on a guy like Tony Dungy for what he said, because what Tony said was simply fair. It was fair. Look, it's going to bring something to this team that is going to be a distraction. It's going to be something every single day because of this, because they were breaking the barrier. The Rams did do that when they drafted Sam's. And I just think that if it was an incredible football player that had just an incredible chance to impact your team, you deal with whatever distraction it is. But Sam, he was not going to be that guy. And I think Tony knows that. Tony knew that. He just wasn't going to be that kind of player. So, I mean, what you're doing is, are you really just going to go out and draft him because you want to be the one that did this and that broke the barrier and understood and brought the guy in? I don't know if you want to do it for that reason. Do it for the right reasons, that you're wanting to make the team a better team.
But to compare Tony Dungy to Donald Sterling, I think that was
where Collins was way over the top.
Way over the top. Because, I mean, like it said in the article or whatever, Tony Dungy has the right to think what he does. It's not like he's persecuting any group of people.
Can you have your opinion in this country anymore at all? I mean, without offending somebody?
Well, I
mean,
I completely get that for the fact. But, I mean, if your opinion is racist, I get that. You know what I mean? Like, that's obviously disgusting. But if somebody has the opinion, and it's not like he's persecuting or saying anything bad about him.
You're right.
There's a difference.
He says, I don't know if it would make, for no more player than Michael Sam was. You can call him whatever. He was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, maybe. I think he was.
But where is he in the NFL right now?
He's nowhere. He can't.
You know why? Because he's not very good.
He's not very good. And he wasn't willing to do even the special team stuff. He wasn't going to play it, he said.
All he wanted to do was be on Dancing with the Stars and Oprah, and now he's in the CFL. I want to say the Montreal Alouettes or Calgary.
He'll be lucky to make that team. He'll be lucky to make that team, I think. But Tony can say what he said as a coach. As a coach.
Of course he can.
About a player. And you can have that opinion. He did not attack Michael Sam. He did not say anything regarding his sexual preference. And for me, that's fair. You can do whatever you want to.
As long as you're not persecuting that person for his sexuality or his race or his creed or religion or whatever it is.
Exactly.
You can have a disagreement, or you can disagree with that lifestyle, or you can disagree with somebody's chosen religion. But as long as you live and let live, what is there a problem? Or this is America, for God's sakes.
Correct.
Land of the free, home of the brave, a place where I am so proud of your citizenship.
And I'll tell you, for whatever it's worth, Tony Dungy is the last person that I would ever see as being judgmental. He's not here to judge, that's for sure. In fact, he's here to be witness only. That's Tony's style.
Amen, brother.
He's one of the classiest guys I've ever known. When my father passed away, that was the first phone call I made to try and get home and get the green light from the coaching staff to go home. I only had his number. But anyway, that's my take. Tony Dungy's a great man in my books. Another great man in my books. Jim Rich.
I thought you were going to say me.
Oh, yeah. A great man, citizenship, the whole thing. I mean, I give you a straight A for the day.
I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know you're free, and I won't forget the men that died that gave their right to us. So.
Home of the brave, man. Jim Rich, Fox 9. Sing on the way out. Sing on the way out. Dude. We're going to take a little break. Keep going.
For amber waves of gray.
I'm not concerned.
Not worried.
Damn it, Maverick.
Oh, I want to be rich.
I have no explanation.
We got a lot of guys I think are going to be able to contribute. You know, certain guys are going to get to contribute more than others. And I would assume Adrian would be that guy who'd get to contribute more than others. But if you're going to be a really good offensive football team, you know, you got to use all the guys you have.
I agree. Best football teams.
Even if they suck, you got to use all those guys, even if they blow?
No, not so much that. But if you got a team and you got some depth and you can use more people, obviously, that's less beating to the guy that you want to have the ball more. And if you can rest him without worrying about taking a setback, you're not losing much, then it's always nice to be able to do that. It's in fact, a luxury. It doesn't come around very often. So that's what Norv's talking about, and he's been a part of some teams that have had some depth. Let's face it, and I'm sure that what he's talking about in the case of the Vikings, and Jim Rich joins the show. Adrian Peterson joining the squad makes life much different for Matt Asiata and Jerick McKinnon.
Yes, it means they're going to sit a lot more.
Yes, it does.
And they may be looking for another team, one or two of them.
No, really, you need three running backs. Who else are they going to keep? It's not like either of them cost very much money, and they're both very useful at this point in time.
That's true. That's true. Asiata certainly has a job as being your goal line guy. He certainly is a counterpunch to Adrian, and he could be a good blocking back. So I guess McKinnon may be the one that may be on the bubble if they decide.
He's a fifth-round draft pick last year, and I think he is a thunder and lightning type of guy. Norv Turner said today that he even looks faster. He can do a bunch of things with him out of the backfield, he said today. I think it's pretty well cemented that those three guys will be the running backs and the running back position going into the regular season. Don't you think, Soup?
I think that all three are going to be involved in this offense. No question about it. All three of them. And Banyard, you know, it's hard for me to say this, but Banyard, I love the guy.
I think he's screwed, though.
I think he is, too. I think he's on practice squad, and I think that's where he can be for a while. If someone gets hurt, you can go to a guy like Joe Banyard off practice squad.
But at the same time, I think Joe Banyard showed a couple of things last year when you were talking him up and he finally got in the game that I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make it to the practice squad and some other team scooped him up.
I would, too.
He's got some talent.
I think he is, too. I swear. I don't know how some people remain on the sidelines or remain on practice squad. Audie Cole. I mean, I can't figure out for the life of me why some of these guys don't get out there more. But and Jim Rich, I don't know if you agree with any of that or not. But then we were also talking about Cordarrelle Patterson and some of the things that are happening with him. Apparently, they're happy about what he's doing so far during the offseason. But Norv Turner and Mike Zimmer both saying good things about Cordarrelle Patterson, which is good because they don't pull any punches. They tell you the things the way they are.
Well, or do you think it's their way of trying to build this kid up and trying to, you know, make him accountable? Because you were there that day when Coach Zimmer had that unplugged media session with us.
Yes.
And just kind of talked about things and, you know, didn't want to share particulars with everybody. But he wanted to kind of point out some things where sometimes the media gets off track on what's the problem on this play, or this guy really missed his route, or Teddy missed a throw when actually it was a receiver running the wrong route. And I know we can't go into particulars of what he showed us, but he kind of laid it out there that, you know what, there's some things that has to be changed with what he does. And at this time of year, I think you talk up all your players you have and all the assets that you have on the club because you want to make sure that everybody is feeling good about themselves, are trying their hardest, are trying to become a viable option to the team, and perhaps eventually he will be a starter and a guy that could contribute on every down. But right now he's not. I mean, last year it was basically Norv just said, I've seen enough of this. I don't want him on the field because he's not doing what we want him to do.
That's the bottom line. I mean, when you put him out there and he doesn't know where he's supposed to be on the field, that's essentially what the problem is where to break a route off, where to cut and be open, how to sit down in a pocket and do a little side adjust for the quarterback. He wasn't able to do that. So that makes him a liability. If Bridgewater is looking for someone to come open and he was the safety valve, and Bridgewater gets hit because he's not turning and looking for the ball yet, you can't have him out there. That's a liability. That's going to get somebody hurt that way. And unfortunately, that would be Teddy Bridgewater. We don't want that. You're not going to get out on the field if you don't know where you're supposed to be out there. I mean, Charles Johnson came in and flourished almost week one.
And I think that's kind of what they looked at. You know, Johnson ran his routes. He's not the fastest. He doesn't have that dynamic breakaway speed that Cordero has. But you know what? He can run a route. He can stop. He can turn around. He can look for the ball. He knows where to be on the football field. And I think that was their biggest problem with Cordero. It's like, you're going to get Teddy killed. And we can't have that happen. So you're going to stand next to me until you figure it out. And so at this time of year, you know, they've talked to him. They've sent him off. He met with the Marine Corps guy or the Navy SEAL guy to try to teach him about detail and about doing exactly what you need to do on every single play and every step of life. And now they're hoping that message got home, because if it didn't, then I'm not quite sure what they do with Cordero.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because as a punt returner and a kickoff returner, you kind of noticed last year, he'd come up to the pile, and instead of blowing through that pile, he kind of slowed up and tried to find a hole. Versus when he first would get the ball, he'd put his head down and just smash into that pile and hopefully broke through to the other side.
He had great field vision, too. That first year in the NFL, I thought everything would just seem like it came to him so naturally. Jim Rich from Fox 9, talking to him every day about this time on Radioactive Sports on 105 The Ticket. Jim, I know the Vikings haven't had this great of an offense since 2009 when Brett Favre was back at the helm. And obviously back when the superstar played in 1998, one of the greatest offenses in the history of the NFL. But really, when you think about it, I'm so excited for this season because, sure, there are still pockets here and there, you know, kind of maybe on the back end of the defense with the safety position or, you know, not really sure what Chad Greenway is going to do in the linebacker situation, even though he's a veteran and we love him. He's played 10 years. He's going to be playing his 10th year with the Minnesota Vikings. Defensive line looks great. The offensive line looks like they covered all their holes. If Matt Khalil can come back from his injury and play the way we know he knows how to. Adrian Peterson in the backfield, the continued maturation process of Teddy Bridgewater, the depth of the wide receiver position. I don't remember a team like the Minnesota Vikings that are going into a season that I've been so confident in that they basically have most of their holes covered and been so optimistic about what this team can do.
Are you talking offense?
Both.
Is that what you're looking at?
I mean, offense, sure, right now, but I would say both. I would say more offense than defense this year.
Well, the defense was better than the offense a year ago. There's no doubt about that, that those guys stepped up, and that's what they looked to fill in the draft, which I was kind of happy with, that they didn't decide to go with a situation where, oh, well, let's take a flyer on Teddy's wide receiving buddy because we could add more to the offense. Instead, they kind of built themselves as a team that, all right, we have a hole at linebacker because Chad's getting up there. We have a hole in the secondary because we just don't have anybody that really plays safety as well and can complement Harrison Smith. So all of a sudden you go into the draft and you grab people that fit into what you need. And by doing that, you make the entire team better. Offensively, they may have some holes on that line. They're obviously trying to slide people around, put them into new positions. But the defense looks pretty dang good, especially if these draft picks are people that pan out. So I think they took the conservative approach in the draft, but I think they took the right approach because they have a pretty good nucleus like you're leaning on, Ben.
I agree. I think that what they've got is a pretty special kind of defense in the works, especially now with Trey Waynes, the number one selection from Michigan State, and also Kendricks. The middle linebacker from UCLA. I think that's the number two draft choice for the Minnesota Vikings. And I think it's just a combination platter that it's a great combination. I don't know what Hunter's going to be, but he looks like an incredible athlete already. He looks like another Everson Griffin to me.
Do you expect him to play right away? Obviously,
no.
Scott Crichton and David Yankee didn't play last year. Crichton, basically a defensive end the Vikings took in the third round. Same with Danielle Hunter this year. It doesn't matter if he doesn't play because the defensive line, you and I have talked about this a billion times, Jim Rich, too. Defensive line is the best thing going for this Minnesota Viking team, last year anyway, without Adrian Peterson.
Yeah,
well, no doubt.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
Listen, I think that we're in good shape on the defensive line. There were like one or two guys that we were talking about yesterday when we broke down and graded each segment and each group on the defensive side of the ball. Linval Joseph didn't exactly wow me with anything, but Sharif Floyd I thought was he's up and coming. I think he's a real football player, up and coming. Sharif Stephan, I think he's going to be a great player because Shamar Stephan, I'm sorry. These names, by the way.
Sharif Floyd, Shamar Stephan.
There you go.
They all work together.
The names, yeah. They can't we just mix and match? Andre Patterson, the D-line coach, Jim, you've known him for years and years and years. He was with us back in the late 90s, actually on some of those great teams. He said that those two guys, Linval Joseph and Stephan, they were going to be a great combination inside on some of the stunts and some of the games inside. So I'll take his word for it, too. He knows what he's talking about. And I do agree.